It's a great pleasure for me to be at this world-famous chakra for Lord Chaitanya's mercy. I've heard of this center and its dynamic outlook and its dynamic expression. And now at last I can come here to partake of Vaisheshika Prabhu's association. And then, on top of that, I get the association of our Govardhan associate, Keshava Bharati Maharaj. Yes, this center is famous for its ability to impact change in the lives of people without gaudy, opulent circumstances. Of course, if Krishna gives opulent circumstances, that is nice. But a devotee makes the best use of whatever Krishna sends. That especially was Srila Prabhupada's expertise. Whatever Krishna sent him, he used perfectly in Krishna's service. In other words, he did not flinch or reserve himself, thinking in the future it'll be better. What I have right now is not so good. No, whatever he had at the moment, he engaged 100% in Krishna's service. Whatever kinds of people came his way, whether wealthy or hippies off the street, whatever circumstances, whatever whatever Lord Chaitanya revealed for engaging in Krishna service, Srila Prabhupada did that. He once said that an expert business person knows how to make a profit, whether the price of rice is going up or down. An inexpert business person only knows how to make a profit when the price of something's going up. But the mark of a true business person, in case we have any business persons here, is you can make a profit whatever way the market is going. Now, similarly, Srila Prabhupada explained, a devotee preaches in all circumstances, some or other, in any circumstance, distributes Krishna consciousness, extracts profit for Krishna. Another interesting statement from Srila Prabhupada. He said about management. He said, management means to create an interest in Krishna where there is none. Very innovative and lucid definition of management. Not that, oh, people are not interested in Krishna, therefore, what can we do? We'll wait until they become interested. Now, by managemental arrangements, you create a scene, a situation, where people will become interested in Krishna consciousness, even though it seems they have no interest. So please think about that. You all are very intelligent, nimble-minded, world-wise. Once again, it's a great honor for me to come to this chakra of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and to receive the association of my senior godbrothers. And I've heard so much about the members here, the congregation here, famous throughout ISKCON for not being a congregation of just believers, but a congregation of doers. Not being a congregation that is attached to the rituals of Vaishnavism, which are certainly nice and attractive, but a congregation that is immersed in distributing the flood of love of Krishna. And this way, You all are setting an example for the world to follow. And I hope that you continue on in this way. Tonight, we're going to speak about something that none of us are familiar with. We're going to speak about envy. In my travels around the world, I like to discuss envy, especially from the viewpoint of the verse where Krishna explains to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, because you are not envious of me, I'm going to teach you something. What chapter is that? Chapter 9, what is that? Text 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam tu te guyatamang pravakshyam yanasuyave gyanam vigana sahitam yajgata mokshyase shubhat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Now, who here would not like to feel relieved from the miseries of material existence? Indeed, many people come to bhakti because of that reason, suffering from karmic reactions, caught in very difficult, intricate circumstances. And in that way, they start to notice that material nature is very severely pinching. So who would not want to become relieved of the miseries of material existence? Who would not want that kind of knowledge? But what Krishna is implying here is that there is a particular frame of mind, a particular mindset, which will disqualify you from understanding how to get that relief. How it is that our particular frame of mind relates to what we can understand. This is a non-Western way of looking at the process of acquiring knowledge. The Western vision of how you acquire knowledge is that it's all based on your intellect, the purity of your consciousness, whatever that is, has nothing to do with what you can understand. Your behavior in terms of what is perceived as morality has nothing to do with what you can understand. What you can understand simply depends on the power of your intellect. That's all. But what Krishna is saying here is that, all right, in other words, when it comes to understanding electrical engineering, chemical engineering, IT, it can be true that your behavior makes no difference. But that's not very important knowledge. This is what Krishna is implying. In Sanskrit, such knowledge is called shilpagyan, just ordinary knowledge of constructing things in material existence. So what is so hallowed and sacred today, knowledge of manipulating the material energy, is considered from the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita to be just quite ordinary. When Krishna is saying, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, Krishna is noting Arjuna's mindset, his mentality, and noting that Arjuna's mentality is fertile ground to hear how to be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So it's not enough simply to suffer the kicks of material nature. I'm sure many of you know so many persons who have been severely kicked by the material energy or are being kicked, but that doesn't mean they're going to turn to Krishna bhakti. It's not enough just to suffer. One needs a certain attitude to hear from Krishna and have the suffering relieved. One needs to be free of envy. Notice Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me." Now, what does it mean to be envious? Can anyone describe the feeling of being envious? You wouldn't know. Yes.
To be unhappy to see someone else's success. You think that that should be my success, not theirs.
This happens in the workplace. Sometimes you see envy between co-workers, or even your own boss gets envious of you. You're rising too quickly. Does that happen? You've all been through a situation like that? You're about to say? Why more control? When you become more controlling and then you become more envious. You completely lose control of. But someone else has those things, right? Yeah, that's the problem. Someone else has those things. Just like Lord Chaitanya in the Shikshastak says, Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sahi. So, giving all respects to others, not expecting any respect for yourself. Now, normally you think, okay, give all respects to others. Yes, others and me, everyone gets it. But Lord Chaitanya says, everything for others, nothing for you. Wait a minute. There's a problem here. So we get envious of someone who has something we want. A boss at the workplace gets envious of a worker on the rise. Like, you may take my position, or you have abilities that I wish I had, and therefore I have to make life miserable for you. One example I like to tell of envy in the workplace. Example from Sydney, Australia. There was one young man from Delhi, and he had done his MBA in Sydney. And then he immediately got a job with what used to be then the number one management consulting firm before they had some problem. What was it? McKinsey, was that it? Yes, yes. So, such a prestigious thing, he got a job immediately with them. Now, they put him in a department under one young lady who hadn't gone to university but had risen through the ranks since she was 18, one of those types. And so she was just like about the same age as him, and he had to work under her. And she told him, "I know what you people from India think. I know what you think about women. Let me tell you, I'm going to show you the reality." So she put him through hell. She just cracked the whip on him and just put him through all sorts of excruciating circumstances. And she kept telling him, you know, "I'm going to show you what the reality is, you know. You know, you people from India, you people, yeah, you think in a certain way. I'm going to show." And he was suffering so much, he even went to the his superiors, you know, the heads of the office, McKinsey office, and they told him, "We know that she's giving you a tough time, but just look at it as a chance to prove your value to the company. Look at it as a purifying experience, which will produce pure love for your job." This went on and on and on, and you know, she was envious that, you know, this young man, you know, he's intelligent, you know, and he's not bothered by all the lifestyle problems that that the typical, for example, Australian or American would be bothered by. You know, he doesn't come into work hungover. You know, he's not in a internal crisis because of problems with his parents. It's just everything is too nice about his situation. So I'm going to make his life miserable. She kept on like that. And then one Monday morning, he came to work. And there she was with her head in her hands and, you know, tears in their eyes. And she looked at him. "Oh, I've had a horrible weekend. Wouldn't you like to please go out and have a cup of coffee together?" He's like, "Ah." He's like, "Oh, my God." What to do? What to do? He fumbled for some excuse. But he was just shocked, you know, after such week after week of envious treatment, then all of a sudden the breakdown. "Please let us go out together." Envy is mixed in with all these strange things, mixed in with actually attachment. Srila Prabhupada once explained that envy is indirect appreciation because you only envy someone who has something that you want. So he said, why not just directly appreciate? Just immediately transform the envy. Because you won't envy someone who's worse off than you. You'll envy someone who has more of what you want, who has attained what you want to attain. So then just why leave it at indirect appreciation? Make a direct appreciation. How nicely you have done. I wish I could do as much. So this is a very easy way for us to deal with envy. Just change it from indirect to direct appreciation. Krishna's telling Arjuna, you're never envious of me. Never. Therefore, I feel motivated to impart to you this most confidential knowledge, Rajavijarajagri. And knowing this knowledge, just see how Krishna is explaining the effect of the knowledge. Knowing this, you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This is not just idle belief or theoretical notion. This is an active experience which causes the cessation of material bondage. Now let us think how we could be envious of Krishna. Why is it so important that Krishna says, because you're never envious of me? We would look at ourselves and say, oh, I'm never envious of Krishna. Why would I want to do that? But then we have to understand who is Krishna, and then we'll see the envy. If we don't understand who is Krishna, it's easy for us to say, oh, I'm not envious of God. No, I believe in God. Yeah. I offer a few prayers. I give a few donations, so what's the problem? But when we understand Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, then we see how we are the culprits. Then we see how we imitate. We want to make our imprint in this world, and we want to make our imprint upon others. That's how we judge our material effectiveness. I have made a stamp upon the world. I have made a stamp upon others' lives. How worthy I am. This is our attempt to imitate Krishna. our envy of Krishna shows that actually we appreciate Krishna. We appreciate him so much we want to imitate him. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Ichcha dvesha shimuttena danda mohena bharata. What verse is that?
It's 726.
726.
No,
727. 727. Ichcha dvesha shimuttena danda mohena bharata. Sarvabhutani sammohang sargayanti parantapa. O scion of Bharat, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Srila Prabhupada gave a very interesting explanation of this verse, saying that, what is it you desire? What is it that you desire in material existence? Hmm? What's that? You desire to imitate Krishna. That's deeper than desiring sense gratification. You desire to imitate Krishna. Krishna is the enjoyer. He has pleasure. I also can have pleasure. I also can enjoy. So, ichcha dvesha samuttena. You desire to imitate Krishna. And dvesha, what is it that, what repulses you? What is it that you can't stand? You can't stand Krishna's instructions. You desire to imitate Krishna and you are repulsed by Krishna's instructions. This is the syndrome, the psychological syndrome of the conditioned soul. And we can see that indeed in the course of our material existence we are guilty as accused. This is our modus operandi. How to imitate Krishna and how to avoid Krishna's instructions. This is the psychology, which will not be taught in any university, but this is the actual psychology of existence. Now, why should we blame Krishna for not speaking such crucial knowledge to someone who's envious? Maybe you should think, well, Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he should just talk to anyone. What is the problem? He should be just magnanimous and just speak confidential knowledge and realization to anyone. But please think about it. You all have had experience of someone envying you. Maybe at the workplace. Maybe just instance of a neighbor envying your family or something. It's amazing what people can become envious of. Would you, to such an envious person, reveal your confidential secrets of your life to such a person? Someone who's actively envious of you, you'll go up and say, excuse me, I want to tell you about a very personal problem I'm having. I want to reveal my heart, my deepest desires. No way. You'd never do that. You only do that amongst well-wishers. Krishna is a person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we try to dismiss Krishna's personal statements, his personal explanations of how he does things, that means we're impersonalists. We will not do that for ourselves. For ourselves, we'll take very seriously what we want, how we want it done, when we want it done. Why don't we allow this same personal expression to Krishna? In fact, the only reason why we have such options, personal options, as part and parcel to Krishna is because we indeed are part of Krishna. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is attuning you to his personal existence, Personal existence means having personal preferences. And his personal preference is not to give knowledge, confidential knowledge, to those who are envious of him. In this way, we can meditate now upon Krishna's divine, impeccable predilections. Just like you, you know, as a tiny individual spark, part of Krishna, you like having predilections. Oh, I like it this way. Or I prefer it that way. You feel very, how do you say, grateful when someone asks you about your taste, your preferences. Would you like this on your salad or that on your salad? Oh, I will take this. You know. Would you like your samosas baked or deep fried? You feel very pleased. Oh, thank you for inquiring about my personal taste. I shall now explain to you this most confidential knowledge. So we get a sense of enlivenment to express our personal predilections, our personal slants and biases on things. That's because we're part of Krishna. Krishna has the perfect sense of predilection. And one of them is that he speaks confidential knowledge to those who are not envious of him. The big barrier in becoming truly free from material existence is envy of Krishna. This is the significance of this verse. This verse is telling you there is a state of mind barrier to being able to understand certain things. It's not that your consciousness can be any way you like and then you can understand the most confidential knowledge. No. Well, this is why our Krishna conscious lifestyle is so important. The practice of sadhana bhakti is distilling and refining your consciousness so that you can understand what Krishna says. Like today, Vaisheshik Prabhu and I were having a discussion and about Bhagavad Gita. And I relayed to him something that Srila Prabhupada's servant said, Shrutikirti Prabhu. Prabhupada was reading Bhagavad Gita. And then he turned to his servant, Shrutikirti, and said, "When have you ever seen an author read his own book?" Usually, he explained, an author, he writes a book, and then that's it. He knows what's in the book, and he wrote it. He moves on to the next thing. So when, he asked, have you seen an author read his own book? And he gave the explanation. He said, "I'm reading my own book. Why? Because I didn't write it. Krishna wrote it." And I'm just reading and noting what Krishna has done. So this is how to approach Bhagavad Gita. Let us see how, using Srila Prabhupada, Krishna has written this book. That's the proper way to approach Bhagavad Gita. And in that way, we won't be envious. We'll be recognizing the extraordinary, supramundane origin of Bhagavad Gita in every respect. Envy causes us to feel like, oh, there's so many books. What's so special about this one? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "I doubt that." You've met people like that? Immediately, "I doubt that." You ask them, why? Why do you doubt? You must have a reason. Said, "No, I just doubt that." And of course, the famous retort. When you say Krishna, they say, no, not Krishna. Well, why not Krishna? Just not Krishna. This is the envy. We need to look in our own lives and see how this envy may still be there and troubling us. How does it trouble us? It causes us not to fully accept the impact of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That reminds me of another statement by Srila Prabhupada. He was once musing to himself. He said, I really wonder how many of my disciples truly accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you might say, we all are devotees. What's the problem? But think about it. To accept in full implication that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the most powerful thing in existence, that kind of acceptance. It means we allow for Krishna's unlimited personal expression without any tinge of impersonal conception. Impersonal conception means we want to put Krishna in the box of our mental speculation. We don't want, unconsciously, we don't want Krishna to fully display himself because we can't do that, so why should Krishna be able to do so many things? Krishna shouldn't be so much better than us. He can be a little bit better than us, but not so much better. For example, some of you may feel slightly, and maybe even unconsciously, a little uncomfortable with, why does Krishna have 16,108 wives? Maybe a little bit uncomfortable, just a little bit. Yeah, okay, I accept because he's Bhagavan, but still. it's a bit, as they say in Australia, it's a bit over the top. They say that here too? <Yeah. laughs> it's a little bit over the top. Nah, I accept that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do what he wants. But wouldn't it just be easier to explain Krishna to others if he just had a few less wives? It would be easier for us to present him, you know. But you know, the 16,108 is just it's a bit excessive, and often we can look at Krishna Leela in that way, that I just wish he didn't do that, you know? You had that feeling with other persons. Sometimes you may even tell them, I really wish you wouldn't do that. Americans will say that, not in India. They won't say that. Americans, they'll say that, yeah. I really wish you wouldn't do that. That's just a bit too much. And in Australia, they have their behavioral guideline, and whatever's in the mind comes out on the tongue. So they'll just come right out and say to you, "What are you doing that for?" Anyway, we have a very quiet and unconscious, very slight problem with Krishna. And that problem manifests in terms of our wishing he would tone himself down a bit. You know? If he would just create, maintain, and destroy, punish all the sinners except us, that would be okay, right? But the fact that he has all these so intricately variegated pastimes makes Krishna sometimes difficult for us to explain. But bhakti yoga means to fully accept Krishna, just like Arjuna said, sarvameta ritam manye. I totally accept everything you said, Krishna. So, when hearing Krishna Leela, we have to watch out for this very subconscious envy in our heart that just a little bit too much, Krishna. For example, when Krishna kills demons, you may wonder why so much detail in Bhagavatam and Krishna book. You ever wonder? Daniel, you ever wonder about that? Yeah. Come on, you can admit, yes? Yeah, it's true. It's just a bit, too much blood and too much graphic description, you know? You wonder, I mean, is this really the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But this is all expression of Krishna's personalism. And a devotee, as the devotee becomes more and more purified, the devotee relishes to the nth degree everything that Krishna does. So that's why a genuine spiritual master trains disciples to relish everything Krishna does, not simply when Krishna is on the bank of the Jamuna with his consorts, but also when Krishna is killing demons. Not simply the Vrindavan Leela, but also the Dwarka Leela, everything. Once during the BBT days of preparing Prabhupada's books, the artists who were making paintings for the books evidently kept making paintings of Krishna with the gopis. And finally, Srila Prabhupada made a formal complaint. Who is simply filling my books with pictures of Krishna and the gopis? We want to see how Krishna controls everything. So he wanted that the full picture of Krishna be presented and that we relish all aspects of Krishna. So when you feel that flinch, like, I wish Krishna wouldn't have done that. You know? Or, this is going to really be hard to explain to others. That's due to impersonalism. We feel a little uneasy with Krishna's personal expression, whereas a devotee is someone who just unlimitedly relishes everything Krishna does. So if we read Krishna book in that way, if we read Bhagavatam in that way, with the understanding I want to relish everything Krishna does, then you'll note your impersonalism, that very unconscious hidden impersonalism, will start to go away. Now, there is envy in the spiritual world, but not material envy. All the emotions in the spiritual world are simply there 100% for Krishna's pleasure. So when devotees are envious of one another in the spiritual world, you're with Krishna more, I should be with Krishna. There are different parties of, for example, Krishna has different groups of consorts. And there can be some evident rivalry. But that's all to give Krishna pleasure. Is it so hard to understand? Really? All right, let me put it this way. Since you're bold enough to answer. Don't men in the material world like it when ladies fight over them? Yes. I know these are not questions you normally answer. But Vaishya Shikha Prabhu, I'll blame him. He has told me that he asks challenging questions sometimes. Yes? I know this is a challenging question of a different sort. But yes, it is a fact. Male psychology, they relish it when a group, you know, ladies are competing and fighting over a man. The ego, the male ego, just expands mightily. Just see, they're fighting over me. Why do we feel that way? Because we are part of Krishna. In Krishna, that quality is there in perfection. So the apparent rivalries in the spiritual world between Krishna's different groups of loving devotees, they're all doing it 100% to give Krishna pleasure. All the emotions in the spiritual world are perfect in that way. They contribute 100% to increasing Krishna's pleasure. Material emotions are expressed in the material world in relation to our material struggle to lord it over material nature. The so-called happiness, the so-called pain, the envy, the anger. It's all about me and my material struggle. So these emotions are just shadows of real emotions. Krishna is showing in his Leela what is perfect emotional expression. In this way, he attracts us from the world of perverted emotional expression. We start to take Krishna's feelings and individuality and his personal expression very seriously. And that means we're becoming devotees. Material existence means we take our material emotional expression to be the all in all. So important. How I feel. Bhakti yoga means to learn how to take very seriously everything that Krishna feels and all the infinite variegatedness of Krishna Leela, the different types of devotees, how they relate to Krishna, how Krishna relates to them. You savor every detail. But if we're so focused upon ourselves and our own struggle for material existence, how can we focus upon the details of Krishna's personal existence? We're too much into ourselves, too full of ourselves. So that's why we have our sadhana bhakti practice. It keeps you from being full of yourself. You stop taking yourself to be the all in all, and in that way you can focus more on Krishna, the supreme all in all, and meditate on all the different ways that Krishna does things. Every little thing that Krishna does, just like before Krishna jumps into the lake to deal with the Kaliya serpent, he gets up on a tree and he adjusts his belt, showing you he's very fashion conscious. These little things are so relishable by a devotee. Now, does that mean that Krishna was looking deficient before? That his fashions were not in order? No, but everything in the spiritual world is ever-increasing perfection. So it was perfect before, and then as part of ever-increasing perfection, Krishna adjusts his belt, and then he jumps into the lake, and he's swimming vigorously around the Kaliya serpent. And as he's swimming, his arms contacting the water are producing the most beautiful music. These kind of details a devotee can meditate on eternally. In order to meditate on such details eternally, we have to be free from envy. Another manifestation of envy, very subtle. Oh, I've heard this Leela before. How many times are we going to hear this? Of course, you don't say it out loud. Aren't there any new Leelas? What am I going to do? I've been a devotee for 10 years. I know all the Leelas. And no, actually, everything about Krishna is ever fresh. envy means that we can't allow Krishna to have ever fresh pastimes. We put a material limit on what Krishna does. I've heard it. I've heard, for example, Damodar Leela. I've heard it 10 times. There's nothing new there for me. Whenever you feel yourself starting to think like that, check yourself. Know that this is a material conception. Rebel against it. And a doorway to further nectarian appreciation of Krishna's pastimes will open up for you. Just like some persons say, oh, I have read Bhagavad Gita. I've read Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is there anything new? When you start to feel that way, this is how you have fun in Krishna consciousness. When you notice that feeling starting to come into your mind, you rebel. You know, this is the dictation of the material energy. It's very subtly trying to desensitize you to Krishna. You've heard it before, right? Damodar Leela. You've read it 10 times. You've done Bhakti Shastri. You know these books. Whenever you feel that way, you rebel. And then another doorway to a higher level of Krishna consciousness will be revealed to you. The reality is that you'll never get to the end of understanding Krishna. You'll never get to the bottom of the nectar in these books. So it's a material conception that enters into our mind. You've heard it all before. You've read it all before. That's actually very subtle envy. What you're saying is, Krishna, you're wonderful, but not that wonderful that I can hear about you again and again and again. you're not one of us. You're a cut above us. So ordinarily, for an ordinary person, we would, hear what that person does one time. Just like for those who go to movies or watch movies on television, it's very rare you want to watch a movie for the second time. Even if it's a movie that is very much appreciated. So then we subconsciously carry over that material conception to Krishna and his pastimes. In other words, what you're saying is, I wouldn't see a movie more than once. At most, rarely I would see it twice. So, okay, Krishna Leela, Krishna's pastimes, Bhagavad Gita, I've heard it 10 times, 15 times, 20 times. Okay. Now, shouldn't it rightfully be time for something new? What you're saying subconsciously is that, well, Krishna, he's great, but he's not that great. That I can hear about every detail he does all my life and hear Bhagavad Gita all my life. I mean, it's good, but it's just not that good. Well, what is that good? Material nature beckons to you. I'll come up with something fresh for you. You'll still be a devotee of Krishna, don't worry. You'll still believe in God. I've got something special for you that no one else in material existence has ever tasted before. Just because you're spiritual, I have something special up my sleeve for you. So just slacken your spiritual practices a bit. Don't be fanatical. Be open. A progressive person these days is open. Why should you be so closed down? Why be so Krishna-focused? No, a real spiritual person, a real devotee is open for all kinds of experiences. Why are you so prejudiced against Maya? Why are you sectarian in that way? You should be open to Krishna, open to Maya, everything. The full experience. And the material energy will inspire you that, yes, yes, I appreciate Krishna. I'm not saying you should drop Krishna. I'm saying you should just be more open and accommodating to all different types of experience. And a main part of experience is Maya. Why have the fear of the material energy? So you start to think, yeah, that sounds good. Right. I want to be a balanced person. Right? And how do you become a balanced person? You take instruction from illusory energy, how to balance. It's impossible to balance in that way. The only way you can balance spiritual and material affairs is by hearing from the source of the spiritual and material energy. Krishna is teaching you how to balance. But then the illusory energy gets into our head and convinces us that Krishna's fine, but in order to balance life, I have to listen to Maya. It's not the job of the illusory energy to give you any real knowledge. The knowledge of how to balance comes from Krishna. He's the source of all the energy. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matasarvam pravartate. So, if you want to balance the energies of Krishna, go to the source. You don't go to the shadow and ask how to balance the light and the shadow. You go to the sun, which is the source of the light and indirectly the source of the shadow. Take your information from the sun, how to deal with the darkness and the light. So these are some of the tricks that the illusory energy plays on us because we have residues of envy. Envy means, I just can't listen to Krishna all the time. All right. Now I've heard from Krishna, I've read about Krishna, I need a break, I need to do something else. The more we can recognize these tricks of our mind, the more we'll be able to cleanse our heart fully of envy. And when the heart's fully cleansed of envy, we can hear about Krishna with rapt attention. Hearing about Krishna with rapt attention means you are no longer living in this material world. Why is it that we have difficulty hearing our japa? Because of envy. The mind is rebelling. Do you really just want to listen to Krishna? 16 rounds worth of Krishna? Isn't that too much? You've already done one nice round. Isn't that good enough for the, you know, in terms of being attentive for the morning? Now go on, chant the rest of the 16 rounds, but, you know, just let your mind grind away and on its own. But you've done one nice round where you were fully attentive. That's good enough for Krishna. Now give yourself a chance. Give your own mind a chance. The fact is, because of the envy, we can't bring ourselves to hear Krishna attentively, nonstop. Our mind rebels. It's just too much for Krishna. What about me? Let me think of my plans, what I have to do today. Let me think of my anxieties. Let me think of things I'm going through. That's important. Once again, this is envy. We don't think that Krishna deserves attentive japa. We think we deserve some attention. Why all that attention going to Krishna for 16 rounds? So this is what we're dealing with. And this is what causes us our problems in our spiritual life. And here in this verse, Krishna's getting right to the root. Arjuna, you're never envious of me. Therefore, I'm going to teach you. Therefore, you can listen. So many people will say, yes, please teach me something that will free me from suffering, something that will stop the miseries of my material existence. but they can't actually hear that knowledge because of their envy of Krishna. Please try to see the connection here. They can't hear it. They can't see it. They can't realize that the solution is being given. I always like to tell the story, maybe some of you have heard it before, how the first time I read a reputed version of Bhagavad Gita during my university days, it was a Bhagavad Gita attempt by an Englishman named Edgerton, and he had his verses in the front and his purports in the back. And in his purports, he wrote that Krishna is a concept meant to appeal to both the intellectuals and the sentimentalists. So you recognize this is envy. Who is he to say that Krishna is a concept, first of all? Who is he to decide these things? And then to further elaborate that Krishna is a concept meant for both the intellectuals and the sentimentalists. In other words, Krishna is a very brilliant concept who can appeal to all these different types. He doesn't want to accept Krishna as he is. Now, we easily recognize that in this case, but what about ourselves? In what way are we flinching from fully accepting Krishna as he is? You see, we are so fortunate to have access to knowledge of Krishna. Even though we have the knowledge of Krishna, we may be deadening our sensitivity because Krishna is a bit too much, or we want to put more focus on ourselves as the enjoyer, the controller. These are the things that are rattling in our consciousness. These are the remnants of the monsters still lurking in our heart. And what's the cure for all those remnants? They're subtle. The cure is just go on intensely hearing about Krishna, and especially give knowledge of Krishna to others. That is a miracle cure for envy. You are presenting Krishna's glories to others, so that is the most powerful cure of envy in your heart. That is why you feel so fulfilled, spiritually fulfilled, and ecstatic by distributing Krishna's glories. You're becoming free from that envy that's holding up your spiritual development. You're positively dealing with the situation. Let me glorify Krishna. That means let me directly appreciate Krishna. The more that we distribute Krishna's glories, the more we're dancing in the ecstasy of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, which is a movement of non-envious persons. We're not envious about Krishna because we're distributing Krishna's glories. This is the proactive way to deal with these remnants of envy in the heart. In this way, we don't have to torture ourselves about being envious. Oh, just look at me. I'm just disgusting. I can't believe that I feel this way. Be positive and proactive about it. Just let me deal with myself by glorifying Krishna, by positively distributing Krishna's glories. That actively cleanses any traces of envy of Krishna you have. And it's such a liberated feeling to become free from envy of Krishna, because then you can hear about Krishna with rapt attention. In this way, I hope you can see that our bhakti process is very practical in every psychological way. I'll stop here and ask if you maybe have some questions. Comments from our senior wonderful personalities. They want you to speak in the microphone. Keshav Bharati Maharaj Ki.
What to say after that wonderful lecture? Thank you very much. So deeply thoughtful, helping us to understand how to apply the instructions of the Gita into our practical lives, especially our internal mental life. Thank you again. I just listened to, this is coincidence actually, because the subject that you talked about in the beginning was so nice about how we, after we hear about Krishna for some time, we may, you don't think we need to hear something else. Well, I was listening to a lecture, and you can look up this lecture if you want to write it down as a reference. It was First Canto, 15th chapter, 30th verse, Los Angeles, 1973, December. Right? And Srila Prabhupada was saying to the devotees, how is it that you come to hear me speak every day? And at the end of the lecture, you become so enthusiastic. You remember how it was, Maharaj, in Los Angeles in 73? At the end of the lecture, the devotees would just roar in after Prabhupada finished, isn't it? They would roar, and they were skeptical. It became so ecstatic. So Prabhupada said, I'm just telling you the same thing every day. Every day you're coming, and I'm saying exactly the same thing. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're his eternal servant. So how is it that you're becoming so happy and enthusiastic and coming back to hear me day after day after day? How is this possible? And then he said, it is because you have ruchi. And I thought that this was very interesting, because you're making a point about how freedom from envy allows one to be able to hear about Krishna the same thing over and over again. And Prabhupada was defining ruchi, which is a higher state than nishta, by the devotee's taste for hearing about Krishna, whatever it is, day after day after day after day. So if you want to hear that from directly from Srila Prabhupada, just to confirm what Maharaj is saying in his lecture, you can look up that lecture. It's 1:15:30, Los Angeles, December 1973.
1:15:30.
Yeah. All right. Mostly people think, well, now ruchi is the test of ruchi is if I have a taste for something higher than the basics. The Prabhupada was defining ruchi in terms of a person's happiness and hearing the basics.
Thank you very much. Now everyone's deep in thought. Any comments from?
That's not a comment. I just had a question, and I hope it's not too far afield. But when you were mentioning the idea that sometimes we hear Krishna's pastimes and you think, "Oh, I wish Krishna hadn't done that," or something, recently, when I was traveling, a devotee was asking me that Lord Chaitanya is famous as the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. And so this devotee couldn't understand the pastime of Junior Haridas and how Lord Chaitanya had rejected Junior Haridas and, as the most merciful, saying, well, he's so merciful, why didn't he, just forgive him or something like that. And I was wondering if, as I said, if it's not too far afield, if you would comment on
that is that particular part of Chaitanya Lila is very grave and requires our paying attention to the commentaries of the acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada, he refers back to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they both say that this pastime is, it has grave import, grave consequences. It's nothing that we can assimilate in a superficial way. We have to hold on to the feet of the disciple succession and try to enter into that lila. Part of Lord Chaitanya's mercy is to set a proper example. He felt that the most merciful thing he could do in this situation was to set this example. And even Mahaprabhu's associates were, you know, you know, they were the same with Prataparuja Maharaj. Mahaprabhu's associates were, were trying to tell Lord Chaitanya that, you know, if you could just bend in this situation. But Lord Chaitanya's feeling that the best way the mercy can be spread is by acting in a certain way. Now, in the case of Junior Haridas, he remained in Lord Chaitanya's association. It's just that he was his association on the physical plane was ended. And because we're in the bodily concept of life, that's what our mind harps upon. Oh no, no more physical existence, no more bodily existence. What's going to happen to you? Oh, right, spiritual world. Okay, kijai. But meanwhile, you know, these bodies, you know, why can't Krishna let us have eternal happiness with a material body in material situations? Why doesn't he do that? Maybe you've wondered like that. Wouldn't it be so merciful? Wouldn't Krishna consciousness spread so easily if we could be happy continually in bodily existence? So what we're saying then is we know better than Krishna. We know more than Krishna about happiness. Junior Haridas continued to be an associate of Lord Chaitanya and to please the Lord with his kirtan. There was no disruption of his association with Lord Chaitanya. But we just focus on the fact that, oh, he gave up his material body. Whereas Chaitanya Charitamrita is teaching you to focus on the spiritual platform. This is something Srila Prabhupada's disciples had to cope with upon the physical departure of Srila Prabhupada. We were forced to deepen our relationship with Srila Prabhupada in another way. So was that a great tragedy, or was it a doorway to a deeper appreciation? Srila Prabhupada always taught us that vani is more important than vapu. Association by instruction is more important than association physically. So then he gave us the chance to, we had to realize that for the sake of our own spiritual life. So a lot of our reactions are conditioned by the bodily concept of life. And for example, let us take the departure of senior Vaishnavas in ISKCON, which is happening and will happen more and more. It's like the body is subject to disease. The body is subject to accidents. But something in us due to bodily conception is just kind of saying, Krishna, why that way? Why did that body of that devotee have to end that way? As if there's some glorious end of a body from the material point of view. just like Srila Prabhupada, from the material point of view, the end of his body was nothing that you would desire, materially speaking. Doctors said that ordinarily a man in that kind of medical situation would be screaming out constantly in pain. So we may have this feeling that why can't everything for the body work out nicely? Wouldn't that be attractive preaching for Krishna consciousness? Huh? Yeah. We've got it all figured out with our intelligence. You know, we know better than Krishna. Krishna, just make it so that everyone's body, you know, is happy perpetually. And that, what a preaching program that would be. But Krishna knows better than us. He knows how we'll actually be happy and what will deepen our relationship with Krishna. So when he says, as you know, Kuntiya Pratijani Name Bhukta Pranashiti, my devotee will never be vanquished, he's referring to our spiritual life. A material body must be vanquished because of attachment. It's hard for us to get that in our head. Material body means vanquished one way or another. A glorious death means you're remembering Krishna. Otherwise, physically, biologically, what is a good death? There's no good death defined biologically. It's not that at the time, from the material point of view, it's not that at the time of death you're thinking, oh, I'm dying from an accident. This is much worse than just dying in my sleep. It's not like that. Oh, I'm dying in my sleep. How much better this is than dying in an accident. It doesn't work like that. Due to attachment to the body, it is extraordinarily painful to give up the body, no matter how it's happening. It's not that, oh, I'll die at the hospital heavily sedated. The attachment to the body is still there, and abandoning that attachment is the most painful thing. So there's no good death from the material point of view. Because we're attached to the body, we look at leelas like Junior Haridas and we wonder. But Lord Chaitanya was not cheating him. Lord Chaitanya was not depriving him. Lord Chaitanya was setting an example out of mercy for proper behavior. At the same time, Lord Chaitanya was maintaining his eternal association with Junior Haridas. But it is it's a deep pastime. The acharyas agree it is deep. It requires a lot of thought. And it requires the mercy of the supposed succession to see into it. You're going to say something? Yes, Maharaj.
You were speaking about how reasons Krishna might not explain intimate things to envious people. And I was wondering, is it possible that Krishna might not do that out of love for the person? In other words, if he were to say something intimate to a person who was actually envious, they may say something back that may cause them more grief and more trouble, and he may want not to see it.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yes, definitely. I know a famous example. Srila Prabhupada preaching, and devotees brought Srila Prabhupada, a famous pop singer of the time. I believe it was Donovan or something. And he was sitting there before Prabhupada with his girlfriend, and Prabhupada began to explain to him the basics of Krishna consciousness. And perhaps the devotees who were there felt that Prabhupada was kind of being a bit guarded. That for some reason the devotees felt that Prabhupada was not like explaining fully, especially when he started talking about the Hare Krishna mantra. And so the devotees felt that, with that, let's do some service. Let's help Prabhupada. Yeah. Yeah. And so that, so well, as Prabhupada was explaining the Hare Krishna mantra, and the devotees felt, oh, you know, I guess they just kind of subconsciously felt that there's more to be said. There's more nectar. Let's help Prabhupada. Just break open the storehouse of nectar. So the devotee brought out, yes, you see, this is what it is. You see, we chant Hare Krishna because Krishna is non-different from his name. Immediately Prabhupada cut him off right in front of the guests. That is an offense. You are offending the holy name, explaining the glories of the holy name to the unfaithful. Right in front of Donna. In other words, Prabhupada's protecting Krishna. This is 100% personalism. Just like if you had a friend and then and someone began explaining the intimate life of your friend to some strangers, you would stop that person. You don't talk about my friend. Just keep my friend's business out of this, you know. This is personalism. This is what I'm saying. Because of envy, we become impersonal. But the more we become free from envy, the more we're willing to accept the implications that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada fully accepted that. And therefore, right in front of a celebrity, he just cut in. Stop. You're offending the holy name, explaining the glories of the holy name to the unfaithful. Right in front of the, you know, this, he's personally responding. And this is why sometimes even their memories, even today, of Srila Prabhupada reacting strongly to Mayavadis making presentations. I've heard, for example, in Japan, ages ago, in the early 70s, there was a program put together by some Indian residents of Japan. And they invited Srila Prabhupada, and they also invited some Mayavadi. And the Mayavadi began explaining his concoctions. And right in the middle of his talk, Prabhupada just told the devotees, start kirtan, start kirtan. And the devotees immediately started kirtan and just drowned out the Mayavadi speaker. Now, what do you think a lot of the guests were thinking? Very rude. This is not sadhu. Sadhu is open for everything, tolerant of everything, all the gods. So I've heard that even to this day, there are Indian residents in Japan who remember this ages ago. You're a Swamiji. Even 35 years later, they can't, you know, they don't understand that how Prabhupada's personal response to hearing the Supreme Personality of Godhead being described as a non-person, no identity.
In the Bhagavad Gita, of course, Krishna says don't give the message to people who aren't austere or devoted. And then Srila Prabhupada mentions that devotees understand the purpose of the Lord, even though he said that. And they still try. And they take a risk, obviously, because they're going out to meet people who sometimes it's hard to tell right away. That particular situation and how, I mean, you mentioned already something that was very powerful, at least to me anyway, about how this is distributing the knowledge of Krishna is an active way of destroying envy. It's profound. And I just didn't have the detail about how, while we're distributing, what is the proper kind of perception of, you know, balancing the risk factor with. Just free-flung distribution in the river Chaitanya's, for instance.
In that paper, Prabhupada also said that the devotees understand the will of Krishna and understand that Krishna actually wants them to become, you know, devotees. So therefore, they take the risk on behalf of Krishna in order to please Krishna.
Yes. Krishna says, don't explain this knowledge to someone who lacks austerity, who lacks devotion, and who's envious. So the devotee says, okay, that's true. We should not explain to such persons. Therefore, what is our program? Our program is to transform the people so that they lose their non-austerity lifestyle, so they lose their lack of devotion, so they lose their envy, and then they'll be suitable to hear from Krishna. And how is that transformation done? It's done by contact with Krishna. Even so, in that most munificent distribution of knowledge of Krishna, still we have etiquette, just like Prabhupada was demonstrating in when preaching to this famous pop singer. And that's the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's purports, that they explain Krishna and protect Krishna at the same time. You may wonder, well, why are we distributing Krishna book, for example? But on every page, along with the Leela, is information how Krishna is not an ordinary person. So if you notice, throughout Srila Prabhupada's purports, whether Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, he's playing, so to speak, all the keys of the piano. He's not just staying at the high end of the piano. He's playing all the keys. One paragraph, he'll be talking about the gopis and Srimati Radharani. The next paragraph will be, he'll be talking about envy and lust and greed. The next paragraph will be talking about materialistic leaders. Then he's back into the cowherd boys or some other pastime of Krishna or something about Krishna's personality or qualities. All the keys of the piano are there. It's inconceivable. So yes, Krishna says, don't explain this knowledge to someone who lacks austerity, lacks devotion, and who has an envious attitude. So the devotee thinks, all right, we will make the audience suitable and receptive to hear Krishna's pastimes and Krishna and knowledge of Krishna. That's our job. That's our service. Vaishya Jacob Ru and I were having actually a discussion about this point in relation to something. It's a longer story. I won't say it tonight, but sometimes a Western audience will see things in Bhagavad Gita and react like, oh, I don't know about that. And so what to do about that? It's a chance for service. How to cultivate people in such a way that they'll at least give Krishna a fair chance. It's like in America, the foremost propaganda is everyone should have a vote. One person, one vote. In Australia, they have another thing they're hung up on. It says in their constitution, everyone in Australia should have a fair go. You know, a fair chance to just be whatever you want to be, just like everyone else. So they really take that seriously. Once in Melbourne, when the government was not giving a license to have a Rath Yatra, the leader at the time, Madhuvish Prabhu, he went to the city council and he made the appeal based on this Australian, cardinal fact of existence. He said, look, we haven't done this Rath Yatra before. We're asking you not to have preconceptions. Let us do it this time and then see. Judge for yourself. Just give us a fair go. I mean, the Australians, okay. Fair go. Fair go means give us a chance, and we'll, and then, you know, see how it turns out. So when I'm teaching Bhagavad Gita in Australia, I bring this point up. Just give Krishna a fair go. I was in Vegas on the weekend, and very nice people came to the program, and they enthusiastically acquired Bhagavad Gitas. And I had to explain to them, just read it from cover to cover and then make up your mind. I told them, you're going to find things in there that are new. You're going to find things in there that are exotic to your senses. You're going to find things in there that are just beyond your present conceptions. Just give it a fair go. Just read it from cover to cover, and then you can start to make some judgments. Okay, that sounds good, okay. We'll read it from cover to cover, and then we'll react. I told him, not that you get to page one and, what is that? And put the book down. I said, you wouldn't start any kind of personal relationship in that way. Whenever you're starting a personal relationship, you're willing to tolerate things that you don't understand in the other person. You're hoping it'll be better and things will clear up. So I said, just approach your Bhagavad Gita in that way. Well, I hope this clears up by the end of the book. So they said, yeah, we'll read it in that way. Because as Srila Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, if we just hypothetically accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's enough to get you in the door. Like, okay, theoretically I'll accept the assumption, and then we'll see. When I get to the end of the book, I'll make up my mind. Just a hypothetical, theoretical acceptance that there's some value here, and not that you slash it apart on page one, but you just let the symphony unfold. That's enough. Yes.
Don't mind me hogging anything. Maharaj, since you're only here one night, actually.
Go for it.
Okay. Oh, all right. Maharaj, everyone here in this community is focused on trying to make improvements and to, you know, please Srila Prabhupada and make this a better mission, better mood, everything. I was wondering if you would be willing to maybe give us your top three tips that we could see. You have been so successful everywhere you go in organizing and spreading Krishna consciousness. Could you give us like three principles or something to shoot for after you leave that we could think of? Sort of.
All right, you asked. Number one. Unlimitedly relish the association of Vaisheshika Prabhu and Keshava Bharati Maharaj. Yes. Krishna is so kind to send these special devotees here. Number two, understand what is real opulence. What is the opulence of this setting here? It is the spirit of the devotees, the bhakti, the desire to render selfless service to Krishna by distributing Krishna's glories. Devotional communities best develop organically, meaning not that you have a weak congregation and then you get a flash building. And everyone can come once a week and offer pranams and then go home. The real opulence of a devotional community is that based on the sincerity of the devotees, Krishna reciprocates. Because of the devotees' selfless service. and opulence in terms of beautiful buildings is a development, a natural development out of the devotional sincerity of the congregation. And it's not that they have to go through extreme or very severe challenges to their spiritual development just to get a nice building. The main thing is the development of the devotional congregation in terms of knowledge, attachment to Krishna, detachment from matter. That can all be seen in the selfless distribution of Krishna's glories. And then Krishna can reciprocate with you in extraordinary ways. And that will make your Krishna conscious faith expand by leaps and bounds when you see Krishna do that. You'll know that this is the Lord's direct reciprocation with our attempts to be sincere devotees. So I'm sure that you're on the right path for attracting Krishna's help, and it'll manifest according to Krishna's timetable. Yes?
Maharaj, I've heard your name in association with loft preaching. I don't know if that's right or not, if you've been involved at all in that. And if that's the case, and if you'd like to speak about some of your experiences with that or some of your insights, what's that all about and what's the idea of it?
Well, you have such foremost personalities here for interacting with the public. In terms of Vaisheshika Prabhu and Keshava Bharati Maharaj, they need a setting in which they can just receive all kinds of people and gradually interest them and bring them along in Krishna consciousness. They need a setting in which people can sit down comfortably and hear from them and be stimulated by them, and then take some nice prasad and do some nice chanting and come back day after day after day just to be around these persons. I'm sure you would agree. They have that charisma. They have that charm. So it's like we've got to put the jewel in the right setting. You have the jewels. That's the rarest thing. Now the jewel requires a gold setting. You want to put the jewels in contact with the people. It doesn't take much. It's more important to have the persons than the place. The hardest thing is having the persons. Now, if you already have the persons, so you just need a place where they can hold forth from. So that all types of persons can take advantage of their association. It doesn't take a big place. It can be a place like even half the size of this room, but just a nice place where, especially for persons who aren't acquainted with Krishna from their family background, they can be a more difficult catch. They don't have the pious good fortune that so many of you have. So, catch such persons to Krishna consciousness. You need a special place where these empowered persons, these empowered Krishna conscious devotees, can bring them along in bhakti. Remember Prabhupada's definition of management. Management means to create an interest in Krishna consciousness where there's none. Not that you just say, oh, they're not interested. Well, that's I guess that's case closed. That's the end of the situation. No. Management means, okay, let's create an interest. Srila Prabhupada is the original loft preacher. As Mukunda Maharaj told me, that before Second Avenue, you've all read in your Everwell Wisher, Prabhupada Lilamrita, about Prabhupada on Second Avenue, but really, some details aren't given there. Before Second Avenue, Prabhupada was doing programs at artist lofts in lower Manhattan. And there he would speak about India and then intersperse talks about India with some Vaishnav philosophy. Because he knew, the audience was interested in India and cultural things and like that. So he would speak in that way and then mix in Bhagavatam, Bhagavat philosophy. And he would chant a little bit himself, just chanting, playing cartels and get the people to respond. Speak, and then after speaking, he would go around in the audience personally distributing the prasad, maybe just one samosa, and ask the people about their lives. How are you doing? What do you do? Srila Prabhupada was making small talk. So that's what he did in order to get things going. So I'm quite confident that if Vaisheshika Prabhu, and when he's here, Keshava Bharati Maharaj, if they had a place where persons can come, particularly I'm referring to persons born in the USA. They're a bit hung up about Krishna, they don't have the piety, so they don't have the good fortune that so many of you have. So they need some environment in which they can rise above so many cultural barriers, perceived cultural barriers. And so Vaisheshika Prabhu does many things, and certainly he would be very expert at that. And then once you get them over these perceived cultural barriers and they can make some spiritual advancement, then they're ready to be part of the general congregation of devotees. But at first, you have to understand, they're in the bodily concept of life. They have so many misconceptions about India, what they think is Hinduism. So many misconceptions. Is this some kind of cult? Is this some kind of sect? This is different. They worship snakes. Yeah. They starve rather than eat cows. There are starving billions of starving people in India, and then there's cows walking around untouched. Or else there's envy. They're taking our jobs. Another business or factory outsourced to India. So all these things are there in the material consciousness, So they need a place where they can come in contact with empowered devotees who will just talk with them and attract them to Krishna consciousness, and then wonderful prasad, because they have to eat somewhere. They don't know how to cook. Like Srila Prabhupada said, he said about India, the happiness of Indian family life is eating. But these Americans, they don't know how to cook. Every night they just go to McDonald's, Burger King, or if they have some more money, they'll go to some more upmarket, restaurant. But if you can serve them nice prasad and give them a nice interactive experience with Krishna's devotee in a non-threatening environment, according to their perceptions, they'll make some spiritual advancement. So I think that's what you're referring to. So I think that with such a personality as Vaisheshika Prabhu, it would be sensational. And with such a vigorous Sankirtan effort that you have here, you would see so many people come to such a location for such an opportunity. So maybe that's what you're talking about. It's just a question of getting these powerful devotees rightly situated so they can benefit everyone, rightly situated on the in the arena. Like Krishna's given you such wonderful jewels, so now we have to provide the setting for these jewels. It's very, very relishable task. And that way you'll see things grow more and more. What I've found out, though, by doing this approach, it's not simply, for example, the Westerners who go for this approach. The young Indians in their 20s, they really like it too. This is cool. This is not like what our mother and father does. This is cool. So, you know, many students, young professionals in their 20s, they go for this approach. They become the greatest advocates of it. Like, this is real. This is sophisticated. This is, yeah. This is the new wave of Sanatana Dharma. So, I hope I gave a little bit of explanation for your satisfaction. He also looks like he would be very jovial at doing such a thing. People like to talk, people like to eat, they like to relate, and people are more lonely these days than ever before. We have everything they need. The best food, the best association, the best talking, the best music. You need to provide a way that they can experience that. Yes.
In the material world, you see a lot of envy. Mm. And then there is the spiritual sphere where you look at Krishna's pastime. The question I have is, well, isn't this envious behavior distracting? And how does the devotee deal
with it? Envy amongst devotees?
So the envy you see around in the material world.
The nature of material world is envy. That's why we are here in the material world, because we're envious of Krishna. We're envious that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And we think, I also want to be like that. So that's why we're here. So we should understand that the very makeup of material existence is envy. We shouldn't be surprised to see examples of envy when that's the very nature of material existence. Anything else? Yes.
What was the third tip? I think Vaisheshiku asked you.
The third thing is, the more you love to read Srila Prabhupada's books, the more you'll love to distribute them. Love of reading them goes hand in hand with love of distributing them. When you're distributing the books, you're distributing your love and enthusiasm for the books. And that's what people feel. And that will bring people around to inquire for more. They want to go somewhere to find out more about these books. So once again, the more you have places that can appeal to all different types of people to come forward and hear more about Bhagavad Gita, the more you'll become even more enlivened to distribute Prabhupada's books. When you see that that all the people I meet, they're going to be taken care of so nicely. They can go to such and such a place, and they'll be Vaishya Shikha Prabhu, they'll be Keshava Bharati Maharaj, and you'll be even more enlivened. But you see, people born in USA, they're not accustomed to sitting on the floor. They're really, well, pardon my saying, they're not accustomed to anything civilized. So, rather than just say, look, this is the way it is, you have to take your Krishna consciousness in this way or forget it, we want to make some overtures, you know, a place where they'll feel comfortable and their perceived cultural barriers won't be there. Perceived cultural barriers, I know what I said. They like to sit in a cafe type circumstance and talk. So gradually in this way they can be introduced to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like I've heard, for example, when Gauranga Kishore goes to university, he has his ways of, you know, right? He just doesn't walk into there. Attention, students! Sri Bhagavan Uvacha! He has his ways, according to the circumstance, how to create an interest where there's none. That's management. They want to learn how to cook, but actually what they're getting is Vaishnava Sangha. So I'm very happy to have this chance to be with you all. And I look forward to the continued dynamic boom here in San Jose. And I have brought my, shall we call him my assistant for these travels. This is Yashodev Das Brahmachari. He's from Palo Alto. His father is, what does he work, your father work for? Hewlett Packard, so executive for Hewlett Packard. So, Yashodev, as a young lad, 14, he became interested that maybe there's a different kind of life. And so he was examining various spiritual texts and getting confused. And he thought that he would expand his options by taking a trip to New Zealand and enrolling in cooking school there. He wasn't walking the straight line that his father wanted to, in terms of, you know, going to, you know, having a normal career path. Just at a young age, he had some spiritual interests. So he went to New Zealand and enrolled in cooking school there. And then he came by one of these so-called loft operations. And from there, he developed his interest in Krishna. And then after that, he went to something I discussed with Vaishya Shekhar, to our contemporary ashram for a year. And then he went to the Brahmachari ashram. So he's come back to visit his family. So you can ask him more questions about it.
Can't keep him, huh?
I'm too attached. No, I'm too attached to yesterday. I'm very stern with him, and he tolerates it. But maybe while you're here, you can, you know, go with Gauranga Kishore and learn what he's doing, you know? Is that possible? He won't upset your presentation. He's a good guy. He's a smart guy most of the time. All right. I thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.